I'm Tony Cox, and this is News and Notes. It's time now for our Africa update. In Congo, a deal to end post-election violence awaits signing. Meanwhile, Kofi Annan tells feuding Kenyans they must begin talks to end the fighting after troubled elections. For more now, we've got Amira Woods. She is co-director of Foreign Policy in Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies. Hi, Amira.
Hi, Tony. It's great to be with you.
Thank you very much. Congo's government and rebel groups have reached a deal to end fighting in the east. At least 400,000 people have fled their homes over the last year as a result of the violent dispute over the presidential election, the first in more than four decades in the country. Now, we're hearing today that last-minute disagreements over the peace deal between Congo's government, Tutsi rebels, and the Mai Mai military may put off the signing which was scheduled for today. Why is it so hard to get a deal like this to hold?
Well, it comes down to one thing. It's richness of the soil. It's almost a curse there in the Congo. We have to remember it's a long tradition of resource-rich regions having actual conflicts going on for both economic and political control of those areas. And the Congo, like many other places, is really suffering from its richness. It's gold, it's diamonds, it's rubber, it's also coltan, without which you couldn't have cell phones or computers. So it is the richness of the land that ends up being, in many cases, the curse.
So is that what the Mai Mai are holding out for? Is that what they are objecting to in this very complicated agreement?
Well, let's remember, you know, the Congo is a difficult place. The elections before the last happened back in 1960s. It's when Patrice Lumumba was actually elected president of the Congo. From that time, when Lumumba was actually assassinated, right, and Mobutu put in place to control those very richness on the soil and below the soil, from that time until this past election, just a year ago now, you know, you didn't have an electoral process take place in the country. So issues around popular voice, issues around vote, issues around control of both wealth and political power, those issues are very much at play. And it is extraordinary that the deal has been worked out under the stewardship of the African Union and other negotiators. It is a historic step forward, but it is not yet a done deal.
All right, let's move on to Kenya. Kofi Annan, the former UN Secretary General, is in Nairobi, attempting to broker a deal that would end the violence disputed there. The Associated Press is reporting that he is now telling the feuding parties that they must enter dialogue. But violence again erupted just today with police firing tear gas on supporters of the disputed president. The opposition party claims the election weeks ago was rigged, and more than 250,000 Kenyans have been displaced by the post-election violence, more than 650 people killed. So what is Kofi Annan up against as he tries to bring these parties together?
Kofi Annan is up against people who are saying no. 8 years into this new century, we cannot have a stolen election. And you have real tensions at play in Kenya with hopes for a democratic process and it's extremely dashed. And so what's at play is an enormous public discontent and resentment and tension on both ends. And so what is needed is a steady hand. And Kofi Annan, with all of the expertise having been UN Secretary General. We also have Graca Machel, the wife of Nelson Mandela, bringing also the political gravitas of Mandela to bear, to bring all sides to the table, to keep all sides at the table, to make sure that a negotiated resolution can take place as the economy spirals out of control and the political violence remains really unabated.
Some analysts are calling the post-election violence a generational revolution, meaning Kenya's younger generation fighting the older establishment for power. Is that an oversimplistic description of what's occurring there?
Well, it's fascinating to watch what's happening. It's not only Kenya, but in many places around the world where people are saying no to electoral processes being manipulated, you know? So it's Pakistan, it's Georgia, you know, it's clearly an issue even here in the U.S. So, Tony, we have to keep a watch at this. It is younger people who are very much marginalized from a political process that hasn't brought forth the type of economic reward or the type of political space that many would have anticipated. And so you have the frustrations of the young, but now that's being coupled with more of a middle class and an urban more human rights organizations that are and actors and leaders that are saying no to this process. And so it is not only the discontent of the young that is being coupled with the discontent of human rights activists and civil society leaders from across the spectrum saying no to manipulation of both an electoral process and also a judicial process that's changing judges right before the election and those types of improprieties that really should not be accepted.
Moving on, Nigeria, the next stop where three international tobacco firms are being sued. Nigeria says tobacco manufacturers are targeting their youth and putting a strain on the healthcare system. British American Tobacco, Philip Morris, and International Tobacco Limited deny the claims and say they do not target children. What about this action? What's behind it, and is there any hope for a successful resolution to it?
Oh, Tony, this one is exciting because for so long, multinational corporations have had their way in the developing world, in the world at large. Corporations have gone really running amok around the world. And the tobacco companies are top of the list. Yes, oil companies as well. But the tobacco companies have targeted minors in many instances, particularly in the developing world, and have gone unchecked. And so for the first time, the Nigerian government has said, we will stand up against these tobacco companies. It is, you know, the first time for the developing world to say no. We demand a different way that will protect the health and the needs of our people, the young people in particular of our countries. And so it is extraordinary that this legislative route has happened, that using the court system to hold these tobacco companies accountable. And you see, as pressure mounts on particularly the tobacco companies here in the U.S., where, you know, there are certain regulations against them advertising to minors, yet they'll find ways to still advertise and sponsor sporting events and the rest. But in Africa, you know, they have gone unabated, actually giving out in many instances samples to young people on street corners. So it is extraordinary that the Nigerian government has taken the stance. And I think we have to watch and hope that there will be many others to follow.
Final subject on today's Africa Update, Zimbabwe. Runaway inflation there has made it nearly impossible for people to buy goods, a critical shortage of cash in the country. And so what do? They print more money. And now a $10 million banknote in the to help the Zimbabwean economy. We've got less than 2 minutes, Amira. What is this really going to do?
Not a whole lot, let's just say. You know, so that $10 million sounds big, but it comes up to about $4 here in the U.S. And, you know, to put this in context, a medical doctor, you know, middle-class medical doctor right now is reportedly earning an income for a month of about $18. So you see that this question of the economy really spiraling out of control in Zimbabwe is very much still in play, regardless of this new bill being issued. And this is going to continue to be a problem, especially as Zimbabwe heads towards elections this year. So both the economic instability and crisis, as exhibited by the spiraling inflation, and now the political crisis that's going to continue as you move towards an electoral process. I think we got to keep our eyes on Zimbabwe for quite some time to come.
Emira, thank you very much for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Tony.
Emira Woods is co-director of Foreign Policy in Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies. She was at our NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C.